Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
Welcome to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I'm Greta Johnson.
I'm Trisha Bobita, and we are joined, of course, by Peter Sagal.
Otherwise, you'd have to change the title.
It's true. Yeah. It would be shorter.
It would be shorter.
Yeah, I know.
This week,
think
we
of the time saved in general if I weren't here.
Let's not go there, Peter. You're 20 minutes late. We'll be fine.
I knew the over-under on you mentioning that was 10 seconds.
Yeah, the odds are good. The odds are good.
Season 6, Episode 3 is called Oathbreaker. That's what we're talking about today.
And should we just say right off the bat, Trisha, you called it.
I was going to surprise everybody by my starting the show by saying Trisha was right.
Yes.
She's totally called it.
Yes.
I want to remind our listeners that last week, Trisha speculated on the title of this week's episode, Oathbreaker, and suggested that the resurrected Jon might use the loophole of him actually being dead to walk away from the Night's Watch. And sure enough, that's what happened. Trisha Bobita, officially a maester. Give her a chain around her neck.
Yeah, man, that is serious cred. I was very impressed. My last notes, I think, in the whole thing, yeah, Trisha called it, all caps, right there.
Let's just use that page every time.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to go double or nothing and make some predictions maybe about this week.
So should we talk about everything that happened at the Wall and then kind of move on from there?
Let's do it.
We sort of started. It was the heart of the episode, I thought.
It really was.
These episodes have been beginning and ending at the Wall. Almost all of them this season.
That's
and it's
true.
The only time, it's the only place we're going to more than once per episode, it seems, is the Wall. So
that also may be, I think, an indicator of where this whole season is pointing, especially with the Tower of Joy scenes and that strange flashback to Littlefinger, who we have not otherwise seen this season, chatting with Sansa in the crypt of Winterfell about the late and almost entirely unseen Lyanna Stark.
R plus L equals J is just getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have we spoiled that? I think we've spoiled that.
I think we have spoiled that. And maybe we've just told people to look it up, which I think is sufficient at this juncture anyway.
It's passive
spoiling.
I also don't think it's a spoiler if it's still a theory.
Right.
Like a prediction isn't technically a spoiler, right?
It's getting to be less of a theory and more of a spoiler and kind of
it feels pretty imminent.
We're moving down the spoiler spectrum is what I'm saying. rank speculation, toward predicting what's going to happen in your favorite TV show.
And what do you think are how many episodes is it going to take for this spoiler to actually play out? This is something we were talking about.
Well, I mean, it's so annoying, I think, to move away from the Wall, how Max von Sydow keeps saying to transmogrified Bran, oh no, that's enough for today.
Right. You must know everything.
Yes.
But not right now.
Exactly. It's almost as if Max von Sydow is just ready to say, no, Bran, we need to save that for the next episode.
Right,
yeah.
And it's so annoying. It's like Bran now is experiencing the frustration of Games of Thrones watchers, which is, why do you have to just give me a tiny little bit in this plot line? Why can't we just find out what happens? Why do I have to go back to Meereen? I wanted to hear Bran shout.
Like, if this is not revealed until the finale, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that right now.
I think every episode, Ned goes up one more flight of stairs.
Exactly. It's
pauses
going to be
for a
like
minute because his armor's kind of heavy.
Oh.
One more round of stairs. One more round of stairs. Yeah. And then Lyanna's there at the very end.
If you're cast as a young Sean Bean, do you have to be good at dying?
special skill?
You know, is it like he needs to look like a young Sean Bean? He needs to have the same accent, and he has to be like look like he's going to die any second, because that, of course, is Sean Bean's great skill as an actor.
Yes, I think
horseback
that's
riding, dying. Special skills.
Okay, so back to the Wall.
Everybody's
freaked out that Jon is back to life. There's like an awkward penis joke, which I really enjoyed.
What's his name? Tormund's Giantsbane? Is that Tormund Giantsbane?
Yeah, Redbeard.
He's great.
Yeah.
There was a lot of like bro dialogue.
I wrote bro hugging.
Bro hugging.
That scene.
There was a tremendous of like really great bro dialogue in this episode, which I think, based on reading some of the books he's written, is a specialty of David Benioff. He's great at writing bros. He wrote 24, 20, The 25th Hour, which people may remember. It's that movie, Edward Norton, This was his first big thing. He wrote a novel.
Yeah.
So he's very good at writing tough guys talking to each other, which you also saw in that great scene in the Winterfell throne room, which we can get to.
I think we saw what was maybe something that old Jon Snow wouldn't have done. I don't know if old Jon Snow would have hung Ollie. I think maybe he would have spared him, or I don't know. I mean, he did stab him in the heart. So
exactly. He stabbed him in the heart.
But it's still like it's an ugly way to die.
I really like you, Trisha. I think that's established despite our feigned hostility.
Uh-huh.
If you stabbed me in the heart to death, would hang you.
What if the death
when you
didn't
came back
stick?
From
I mean,
no,
I mean, that's I mean, I think I think that is the distinction here that we need to deal with when talking about John. On the one hand, we're really used to heroes of all kinds, going back to the Sunday serials of unimagined youth, because I'm not old enough to have watched Sunday serials, that we're all used to the hero seemingly killed. But no, he's only wounded. Or
right.
it turns out that he was wearing the secret, you know, bulletproof
pocket
vest.
Constitution.
Exactly.
Stopped the
something
bullet.
Like that. This is a category, you know, different. They killed him. He was dead. And
yeah.
Jon Snow seems to be really aware. I was dead.
Yeah.
As opposed to what happened? Oh, I thought I was dead. I guess I'm not. No, I was dead. So I think his feelings about things, as was discussed, are significantly changed.
I think also the important thing we learned at the wall is that he saw nothing, heard nothing while dead. The
I
Red Woman
that.
Was really hoping that he'd had some like coffee. He'd had some Tuesdays with Maury with the Lord of Light or
yes.
something where he had come back with some wisdom or something like that. But instead, he just remembers darkness and nothing.
It would be great if the Lord of Light was played by Jack Lemmon, but that's another story.
You know, partly though, I was thinking like if he did see something, would he necessarily tell Melisandre though?
I don't know. Maybe. It didn't seem like we're supposed to think that Jon Snow is real cagey.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
There was something that happened there, and I enjoyed, I mean, dramatically, the fact that he's like, there's nothing.
Yeah.
You die and there's nothing,
mm-hmm.
and that's terrifying. It's possible that Melisandre could have pointed out, that may well be true. Nonetheless, I brought you back to life from the dead.
Sure.
And also, look what happens when I take off this necklace. Kazaa! So clearly, there's stuff going on here
right.
that might give you some hope that there's supernatural forces at play. Let's focus on that. But no, instead they got into an almost Beckett-like existential, like Endgame at Castle Black. You know, we are born astride a grave. Yeah, but watch when I take off this necklace. I'm just saying.
It's also that we see that John physically has his wounds, and when Redbeard gives him a hug, he sort of winces.
Yeah.
So we see that he's feeling pain. He's not really regenerated. He's just alive again. So he's still in pain. He still has battle wounds. It doesn't seem like he is too different from old John, right? People wondered if he was going to come back as sort of a zombified John or, you know, a stone heart John. But, you know, apparently they got to him quick enough where his heart didn't turn to stone. He's still, you know, hugging his bros at Castle Black and on his bros.
It also seems that he takes being murdered as an emotional experience as opposed to a really terrifying physical existential one, i.e., he doesn't focus on, I was dead. I saw my life end. I experienced death. That was hard. He says,
I did what I thought was right. And I got murdered for it. And now I'm back. Why?
I don't know. Maybe we'll never know.
What does it matter?
I mean, he feels like the way that one of us would if we didn't get the promotion we wanted.
Well,
except
and you know,
more.
they say that most guys, after they have open heart surgery, end up real emotional afterwards. And this was just a poorly done open heart surgery by Ollie.
Good one, Trish. Yeah.
They get all sappy and sobby after heart surgery.
I was going to say maybe he needs a pet, but he has one.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So one of the few Starks who still does.
Oh, God. Oh,
so,
poor
so
shaggy
the,
dog.
So the end of this particular scene at the wall, John cracks a joke. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, yeah. He made a little joke. It's true.
And it got me thinking, like, when was the last time John cracked a joke?
Oh, he cracked a joke in the season finale, frankly, the last time we saw him alive, where he said to Sam Tarwell, he said, I'm glad the end of the world is working out well for somebody.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. I guess
not,
he does
not entirely humorless.
I feel like he takes himself too seriously.
He just appears and acts humorless in all regards. He occasionally, though, has a sense of humor.
I thought maybe now he was going to be like, funny, fun, John.
That's what happens.
That's the experience?
Yeah, totally.
You get killed, you get stabbed
he realizes
to death by your false friends,
it's
and you wake up.
It's all about laughter. her.
And you say, wow, you know what I was thinking?
A good time.
Instead,
he grabs his cape. I get no respect.
Instead of guarding the realms of men,
yeah.
I'm thinking of a career in stand up.
Yeah, totally.
I want to. Oh no, you know what he's going to do. He's going to get into like a storytelling series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. About his not dead.
You know, he's gonna like go and do a moth.
Yeah.
About,
oh my
you can
God.
Tell. He's already wearing black.
Really
he's suited for that lifestyle.
Speaking of Sam, at the end of last season, we mm-hmm. haven't seen him until this episode. He's on a boat with Gilly and little Sam, being seasick. And really all that happens is we get some exposition that he's taking her to Hornhill, where he grew up,
yeah.
to leave her and the baby there. And then he's going to go try to become a maester, which is what we knew they were doing before. So that scene was actually kind of just reminding
Although
us that
there
all exist.
There was another little bit of exposition at the end that was subtle. And I think I got it, which is that she says something about she refers to him as the father of my child.
Yeah.
And Sam looks over at the baby and, you know, he's thinking, he says, well, I'm not the father of that child. When I met you, you were pregnant. And then he realizes something and vomits again, i.e. she's pregnant. Because
nice.
We remember the end of the world was working out pretty well for Sam.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, I had this moment last night where I was like, what if it all comes down to Sam saving the world? What if it's like a Neville Longbottom situation?
Speaking as a formerly pudgy, unathletic, nerdy kid, I would think that would be awesome. Sam represents all of us. And Sam, I think, in this regard, represents George R. R. Martin, who, as he will tell you, was a nerdy, overweight, unathletic bookish kid. And so I think Sam's out there for all of them. I don't know how it's going to go. I don't know how many people remember this from season one. But the reason that Sam was at the wall was because his father, having acquired another heir, a younger son, said to Sam, either you're going to go to the wall and take the black or you're going to die in a quote-unquote hunting accident. I just made air quotes. I don't know if Sam's father did, but he implied them. So the last we heard of Sam's father is, if you do not leave here forever, I will kill you. Even though Sam said, well, my mother's nice.
Right.
I don't know how well this is going to work out for Sam and Gilly.
My dad. I don't know. Maybe he's manned up enough that his dad will be okay with it.
It's possible. He is made. You know. He is. What do they call him? The White Walker Slayer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you never know. I wish Sam well.
Sam.
Aha! You guys were talking about where they are in the boat. I need to look this up. My assumption is they're taking a sea route, as was more quick in
those
days.
Well, I think if they're on a boat,
yes,
taking a sea route. Peter.
I was in the middle of a statement. I paused for a comma, and now I shall continue.
You're very adamant about articulating your punctuation today.
I am, comma, Tricia, period.
Period.
Period. They're heading down the east coast of Westeros in the Narrow Sea. And then I don't think they go all the way around Dorne in the way they used to go around the Cape of Good Hope and before the Panama Canal. I think they'll stop and then walk across land to the Citadel, which is an old town, which is in the West Coast.
You're listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I'm Greta Johnson here with Tricia Bobita, and we are going to talk about Dany and this weird, like, widow situation. What do you guys
think? I'm old, and when I was growing up, I read these books that were called Dany something in the anti-gravity, Dany Dunn in the anti-gravity paint, and you just reminded me of that.
Oh, good.
Dany and the Dushkaleen.
Good.
Anyway, sorry,
That's
moving
perfect.
On.
Perfect.
It's a temple of sorts for all of the widows of all of the calls. I like that the old widow is just sort of having none of her youthful exuberance of like, I'm going supposed to be important and do things. And she was like, yeah, we all were, honey. She's
very much like,
I did like that line.
She reminds me of like this character actress, I think, would probably play the waitress in a lot of diners who gives good advice. Like,
right,
this is
exactly.
Who this woman
She's
is.
Like Flo. The chief crone is named Flo.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get these wonderful actresses from the 50s, 60s and 70s, most specifically the woman who plays the Queen of Thorns, whose name, Diana Rigg. And they're showing up in their older guys, and it's great to see them. I wish we could have had Lily Tomlin as the head crone.
She's busy on Grace and Frankie.
It still would have been awesome. And they're all speaking Dothraki, so it doesn't matter where they're from, right?
You can
speak Dothraki.
It's true.
But we find out that Dany
One horsey
isn't necessarily.
Dorsey? Sorry.
We find out that that Danny doesn't necessarily get to stay. That actually the calls are going to sort of vote on it or something.
It's setting up a plot point. So now we know how the Dosh Kalin, the Vase Dothrak subplot is going to go. They're going to have this big gathering.
The Jedi Council.
And we saw And we saw in the coming attractions that you have Sarah's lover boy, peering at them from the traditional place that all enemy encampments.
The thing you do with your wrists when you're on the horse.
Well, no, they're doing. They're peering at them from the traditional place that all enemy encampments have, somewhere above in a hillside for the rescuers to peer at them from.
Yes,
the,
of course.
The peering precipice, we call it.
The peering precipice.
And so my guess is that Danny's going to go to this thing. It's going to go up. It's going to go back. It's going to go forward. And you don't know what's going to happen. And finally, they're going to condemn her to death. And then Sarah's lover boy are going to swoop in to the rescue.
Yeah, man, the storyline is boring. The storyline is like you're just waiting for it to resolve itself because you know there's not actually going to be any significant like character development or growth in the process.
I hope, even though as I predicted that, because Danny has spent an awful lot of time being carted around by various things and people,
man.
Dragons, Khalasars, it would be cool if I ended up being completely wrong. Sarah's lover boy. I love that, Trisha, if that was yours.
That was me.
I love you even more. That when they come rushing into the rescue, totally fail, and it is something that Danny has done to rescue them all. I think that would be better. So if anybody's listening to me a year and a half ago when they wrote this, please do that.
It would be better. I still think it would be boring.
But I think
what could happen that would make it not boring?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I just, the whole, from the outset, like, Drogon hates Mondays. Like, she's stuck in this random wilderness. It's just like, why is this, like, what is the point of this happening, you know? I guess Jorah will be dead by the end of it.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Like, other than that, I just don't really see the point of this. You know, and I
think just that we're not ready for her to get to King's Landing yet, so we have to vamp.
Exactly.
Right.
I feel like it's just kind of killing time until something can actually happen, and that's kind of like what I felt like
if, and I agree with you, if all that happens, it would end up just being like Dorne, the whole Dorne subplot of last season. If all that happens is they go and they rescue her 3, 4, 5 more episodes to play it out, as Bran knows, you don't get to see a lot every day. And then they bring her back and we just start from where she left off.
Yeah, it's just a reset.
That would be boring.
It's just an annoying reset.
What would be interesting is if somehow this side adventure amongst the Dothraki ends up solving Daenerys' larger problems. Remember, when this whole thing began, the whole idea was she and her Khal husband were going to take a army of Dothraki across the Narrow Sea to conquer Westeros. Maybe we'll end up back there. Maybe she'll march in marine with reinforcements, with guys wearing leather on horseback, put down the Sons of the Harpy, and then on we go to the final climax.
That's true. She doesn't have...
Okay.
As we go to marine, we find out that it's actually the masters from the other cities...
Yes.
...who are funding the Sons of the Harpy. So really, her whole, quote, empire, air quotes again, has disintegrated. You know, she thought she could free slaves move on, and sort of keep political change having happened in these other places, but the masters are in control again. They're out for her blood in Meereen. And so the small council meetings there are some conversations about trying to figure out, like, do we just need to go head on and fight them? Is violence the only language
they understand?
The small
council meeting in Meereen was a boring bit of comedy that was there to give Peter Dinklage something charming to do. Because, it was literally almost killing time before Varys showed up to move the plot along. Let's play a drinking game. Let's have comic byplay between myself, the eunuch, and the slave.
If I wasn't here, what would you be talking about? Patrol. What we see on patrol. Who we capture on patrol.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
I wrote yawn here. This was the second yawn.
We're back to yawning again.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I was tired. I will say that. But also...
Would you like to finish these recaps by talking about something you like? Something different?
No, that's
okay. But then we'll yawn, Peter.
I understand.
Good one, Trisha.
Yeah. Nerdette recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal and then a little bit of what? West Wing? What do you like?
And then some fun stuff. Yeah.
And then some
that
fun
would be
stuff
me.
That makes... Yeah, I know.
I like the West Wing.
Yeah,
but
you're not going to... I mean...
All right. Nerdette recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal and then talks about corgis a little.
Oh, yeah. Corgis.
We might have her now.
Right. Yeah, I lit up a little bit. Okay. Town. I think we go to town, right?
Yeah.
King's Landing.
Boring.
No, first of all, it's about time to say I disagree with you. I like this episode because actually stuff transacted as opposed to happened. A lot of times when we see, and particularly if there's a problem with Games of Thrones, is we just advance the plot by showing us what happens. This episode, there was more of stuff as it was worked out, most importantly, John's reaction to being dead and not being dead and what he decides to do and how he deals with it. We actually got to see that playing out in real time. We got to see Varys gathering information, which is great because we've been told for 5 seasons that Varys is really good at gathering information, but we never see how.
It's true. Now we know 2 of his tactics.
Yes.
One is putting prostitutes in witness protection.
Right.
With a bag of silver.
Right.
And the other is giving sweets to homeless children.
Right. So, I mean, and it's nice to know. So we have a scene in which Varys needs to extract information from this traitorous prostitute assassin. Prossassin?
And it just sounds like an acid reflux.
And instead of torturing her or threatening her, he says, I want to make you happy, which is an interesting approach, and it works. And I thought that was very cool. It's like, thank you for showing me how they did that.
He wants to make her happy, but he also makes it clear that she can do this or die.
Well, yes, of course. But the way that he goes about that was interesting and fun to watch.
I did like that. I did like the scene with Varys and how heavy the bag of silver was.
Yes.
I almost imagined her taking the bag of silver and then him killing her as she walks out anyway. I mean, he could.
Varys in the books is a little meaner. He actually arranges the direct assassinations of various people, and you see him do that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like this Varys. I like a guy in the world of Westeros, or excuse me, Essos as well, who is able to get stuff without overt threats of violence or violence. And it's fun.
So we have the Wonder Twins and their giant trying to crash another small council meeting.
Yes.
And
the Wonder Twins.
Yeah, that's good.
Uncle Shape of incestuous murderers. Oh, we already are.
Oh, dear.
And I liked that, too. I liked that where they said you can't make us leave.
But you can't make us stay.
Which is a good point.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, get up and walk out. Why not?
I thought that was a boring scene, too.
Of course you did.
I didn't think that was a boring scene because I'm glad that Granny Tyrell, Olenna, is back because she gives Cersei shit in a way that is just unlike any other.
Yes.
Can I help you?
Why are you here?
My mother.
I was invited, my dear, to help deal with several troublesome issues, such as the Queen's imprisonment.
Thank you for bringing it up. It's well past time we address the abuses I endured.
Marjorie is the Queen. You are not the Queen because you're not married to the King. I do appreciate these things can get a bit confusing in your family.
She's pretty awesome. Diana Rigg is prior mentioned, as mentioned previously, is what I'm trying to say.
So I did love that part, but yeah.
And then we have Tommen go visit the High Sparrow, which I like that one of the recaps, I think it might be Entertainment Weekly, I may be wrong about that, still calling him Bernie Sparrow. I just love
Bernie Sparrow. I love it. It's true. As far as I know, we were the first to see it, but we are far from the only to see it.
And has anyone ever seen Jonathan Pryce and Bernie Sanders in the same room?
You make a good
I'm
point.
Just asking.
Oh,
there is another good scene because, all right, here is the task. Again, I tend to think of the show from the perspective of the writers. Here's the task. The task is Tommen is going to, the King of Westeros, is going to confront the High Sparrow, who he hates, and wants to kill. And the High Sparrow knows that he can be killed, even if it won't kill his cause. What does the High Sparrow do? How does he, assuage Tommen, bring him over to his point of view? He talks about his mother's great love for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it, like Tommen going, oh.
Yeah, she does like me.
She does. And it was dramatically effective. I bought it. I bought that Tommen would be assuaged in that moment. You know, and it's like, yes, thank you, writers. Thank you, actors, for giving us scenes of active manipulation of other people, which is what we tune in for.
I did like it was kind of Mother's Day-y.
Not a coincidence. Mm-hmm. It was broadcast on Mother's
Day.
Right,
yeah.
I don't think they were thinking about that, but all right.
There was a bit of dialogue between Qyburn, who's taken over from Varys, Cersei, Jaime, and, of course, it's funny they've stopped calling him Sir Robert Strong. Everybody knows it's Gregor Clegane in there, in which she laid out a strategy that I did not grasp. So did you guys follow that?
I think I did. So I think what happened is that, and the High Sparrow mentions too, right, that her atonement is not complete. Even though she did this walk of shame, she also needs to go on trial.
Right.
Well, if she goes to trial, she can request trial by combat, and then she can have the Mountain fight her trial by combat. So that's the idea of that's a trial by combat I'd like to see is what Jaime says.
Right.
Like kind of pointing up at the Mountain.
Oh, so when she said, so there's a response like he has hundreds of followers of faith, members of the faith militant. And she says we only have to kill one. Oh, I get it. So she's planning yet another trial by combat, which has worked out so well for everybody, every time.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins with trials. You know? Honest to God, it's just the gift that never stops giving, trials by combat.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, Bravos. Arya.
We needed Rocky music. I really wished that her stick fighting...
So, you know, something, Peter, that you have mentioned before that I do think is worth bringing up, especially in this scene and thinking about Sam on the boat, is the passage of time.
Yes.
And again, just how inconsistent and weird it is.
It is weird. You don't know how long Arya's been sitting out there. You don't know how long Arya's been in Braavos.
Right.
You don't
know
anything.
How long has she been training? Did she learn that in a day?
And then, what's his name? Rickon shows up and you realize, oh, it's been a decade or something.
Yeah,
because now he's shaving.
Oh my gosh, I
know,
love his hair.
It's pretty good hair. We skipped a bit. Back
no,
to
I mean that's okay. I feel
Arya
like we
got
said
her
enough
eyes
about
back.
Arya.
Yeah,
she's,
I know.
Yeah, so that's she's reset.
Yeah, I honestly think that we're because they use the same actors to play these young children who are growing in the way that humans do in the years that it takes to produce these episodes of TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's confusing. You see Rickon show up.
Yeah.
Like he must be 4 years older since the last time we saw
yeah.
him.
I still don't recognize Bran.
Yeah, I know. And so that implies a length of time that has passed in the real world, our world, that may not have implied to be have passed in the world of Westeros. So it's a little confusing.
It's funny because we actually just got a voicemail last week from someone saying,
where's Rickon?
Where's Rickon?
Yeah.
And now we know he is trapped with Ramsay.
He's been taking HGH at Alex Rodriguez's training center in Florida.
And that he didn't get far, right? Because they split apart from each other
yeah.
and he and Osha got captured by the Umbers, which are the closest family to the wall. So they
right.
didn't get much farther than the wall.
Well, we don't know how long they've had them either.
Yeah.
I mean, for all we know, they could have been hiding in a village all this time until the Umbers showed up. Have we moved back to Winterfell? Can we talk about
yeah.
Winterfell?
Yeah, we're
there.
Love that scene. I loved Lord, I guess the new Lord Umber.
Yeah,
coming
the new bros.
In. The new bros.
George.
I loved him. I loved his, shall we say, salty language.
Mm-hmm.
I loved his absolute resistance to all of Ramsay's bullshit.
Yeah, that was
I was
nice.
Like, yeah. And I liked the way that he negotiated with Ramsay. I mean, he knows who Ramsay is. He knows
mm-hmm.
what Ramsay wants. He's got something Ramsay wants. He wants something in return. Let's put aside the bullshit and the whole nonsense about, you know, taking the knee and let's actually deal with each other. And I thought that was pretty cool. Again, I go back to David Benioff's skill in writing about tough guys doing tough things.
Totally.
But my favorite part is that they all seem a little pathetic in that scene. They're all trying to be their dads, right? They all feel
oh, yeah.
to me like they're wearing their dad's
yeah.
suit coats. And they're like, we're in charge now. We're the grown-ups.
Yeah.
And they can't, you know, they can't do it right, even if they wanted to. And so it's part they're bucking tradition and part they're just actually not as savvy as their fathers.
Right.
Even though they think they are right now.
I'm going to throw in a little nerdy thing for the readers of the books. I don't know if it's ever going to come up in the TV show, but that was Lord Umber. His father, the Great John, as they called him in the books, was killed at the Red Wedding, if I'm not mistaken. So why wouldn't he be really, really, really mad at the Ramsays? Or the Boltons. Sorry, not the Ramsays. So just pointing that out. But I liked him. I liked his dress. I liked his manner. I like that scene. I love that little look. He's like, it's a little boy like you like.
Uh-huh.
And the other guy goes, how do you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he stands up and is going to be mad, but then he doesn't say anything.
Shit. Damn, I didn't know that.
But then
also,
poor Shaggy Dog.
Poor Shaggy Dog.
Yeah,
poor
how many dire wolves are left?
Nymeria is out
ghost.
There somewhere. That was, of course, Arya's dire wolf. And, but they're all, the rest of them are dead.
Sansa's, ghost is alive.
Ghost is alive.
John.
Sansa's was killed by Ned Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Had to be. Sad. Robb's was killed when...
At the Red Wedding,
at the
right?
Red Wedding. No, Bran's must still be alive, but I think he's out there running around in the woods. I think he ran away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the name of Bran's direwolf, who saved his life once.
Yeah, he was with them when they were getting to the Children of the Forest and the tree at the end of the last season.
Yeah, so we haven't
or the
seen
end
him.
Of season four.
Yeah.
So he's around, I think.
I know we're zipping around. Can we move back up to the tree?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was hilarious to have Max von Sydow saying, did you think I'd want to be living here in this tree?
I've been waiting for you. You never call.
You never call. You think I'd enjoy this, sitting here in this tree? I was like, no, that was so funny. And I don't think they meant it to be funny.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was just thinking Max von Sydow, again, 87 years old, one of the greatest actors alive, you know, giant of international cinema, looking at a script saying, so you want me to say, do you think I've enjoyed sitting in this tree? All right. I did it for Ingmar Bergman. I can do it for you.
I will need a hoist into my tree and we shall begin.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway. Cool. Oh, can I say one thing before we move on?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say I mentioned I was talking about Samuel Beckett in regard to John's experience of being dead. There's actually almost a Beckett reference in this episode where John says, the resurrected John says to Davos, I failed. And Davos says,
you go on. You fight for as long as you can. You clean up as much of the shit as you can.
I don't know how to do that. I thought I did, but I failed.
Good. Now go fail again.
Yeah, that was a great bit.
And of course, the entire Beckett quote is, fail again, fail better, which Davos didn't say because then he'd have to turn to the camera and wink.
Like Lucille Bluth, though, right?
I'm just so glad. I'm just so glad the Onion Knight is there for John, though.
Aw, I'm glad the Onion Knight is there for
all of
us.
You think he's going to leave Winterfell to hang out with John? I think that would be the best
miniseries spinoff. Davos and John
on the road,
traipsing through the North.
Did you see that tweet from someone who said that we should name the Roos Bolton spinoff Roos Morals?
No, but
it's
I applaud
good.
It.
The Better Call Saul.
Good.
Oh, yeah. The Better Call Saul thing. Yeah, oh, yeah. The prequel.
Roos Morals.
Yeah. Better Call Roos. I like it.
Roos Morals.
We'll get to some of your questions in a minute, but first, it's time for a break to acknowledge this week's sponsors. More in a moment. You're listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I'm Trisha Bobita here with Greta Johnson and Peter Sagal.
Okay, so let's listen to a voicemail.
Hey guys, this is Kelly from Missouri calling, and I just started listening to your podcast. I'm having a lot of fun with it. Read all the books, so I'm one of those people. After watching the show tonight, my theory is maybe Jon Snow was inside Ghost, and it took Melisandre's magic to bring him out. I don't know. We shall see. Anyways, I'll keep listening and keep up the good work. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
That is not an unlikely theory based on there's a lot more, as they call it, warging in the books. People are warging to and fro, into and out of animals. It's something mm-hmm. Bran does consciously. Mm-hmm. Don't you think Jon would have mentioned that?
Yeah, that's the thing. The whole saying that he was in darkness makes me think he probably wasn't in
Yeah,
ghost,
he doesn't say, I was in darkness and knew nothing except for a strange urge to lick my own balls and an ability to do it. Send me back.
You know what, though? It's interesting to think, though, how much Ghost was howling when Jon had died. Like, maybe it was Ghost being like, yo, I'm in here.
I think it was like, he's dead. I'm sad.
I think so, too.
I'm a puppy. It's a good theory, but and in a weird way, if I hope they never engage with that. There's a terrible tendency in fantasy and science fiction to explain stuff that doesn't need to be explained.
Mm.
The classic example is at the end of the horrific Revenge of the Sith, when the last thing somebody explains to Obi-Wan Kenobi how he can commune with the dead. It's like, we don't need to know that. Just let us see it. So you don't need to tell us how he was resurrected. He was resurrected. We'll buy it. Let's move on.
I do think the other thing that means that maybe that isn't what happened is that the words she spoke were the exact words that we heard several seasons ago when we saw the Brotherhood Without Banners resurrect one of their own with the priest there.
Okay. So you've done some internet sleuthing.
Yeah, that's a good dive.
I have
there,
because
Trisha.
The language maker for Game of Thrones came out and said in a Tumblr post, here's what she said, here's what it means, here's what she said, here's what it means. And it's okay that I'm telling you that, because if you go back and watch, you'll see it's the exact same sort of spell being cast that she heard the Red Priest do to bring back this other guy.
Right.
So she didn't make it up.
She wasn't there.
Okay.
Wasn't she there?
She wasn't there. But she's part of the... I mean, presumably she went to, like, Red God Priest
School.
She took
the same
seminary.
Classes.
Right.
Yeah.
She took the class. Leviosa.
Exactly.
Leviosa.
Exactly. There must be... That implies, like, an entire Hogwarts for magicians of the Red God.
Oof. Westeros Hogwarts would be
We are coming
grim,
up with
though.
A whole series of spin-off shows.
Okay. I think HBO should be paying us
I
for
think
all these
so
ideas.
Too.
Good one, Trisha. Let's get on that.
Call us and tell us your theories and predictions. Ask us questions. Chide us for not knowing things that are very clear to you.
Yeah, definitely do that to Peter on Twitter.
Oh,
that's
please.
Always really fun for us.
312-948-3000. 4687 is the number to call if you want to leave us a message.
You can also find us online at nerdatpodcast.com. We are at nerdatpodcast on Twitter, and he is at Peter Segal.
The show is produced by us with help from our WBEZ cohort, especially Joe Dassault and Robert Anderson. Thanks also to our interns Maya Cole and Sebrin Mallard.
Joel Meyer is our executive producer.
Our theme music was composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music.
You can listen to us wherever you're listening to us, because, in fact, you are already listening to us. But we would really love it if you would subscribe on iTunes or NPR One or Stitcher or any of those really wonderful things. Don't forget, you can search for Nerdette Recaps. And it's also really nice if you throw us some stars and write a review like the lovely Alfonso Lomelli did.
What did Alfonso Lomelli say?
I don't remember, but it was nice.
Okay, fine.
All the stars. They give all us as many stars as possible.
All the stars in the sky.
Also cookies.
Yeah, I need to
I like
cookies.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, if people want to send in cookies, I do this for cookies. If you send me more cookies, I will do more.
All right, great. Sounds good.
Now the poor person who works on the mail here is going to have...
Till next week.
Till next week.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.